And now, a warrior for the Word of God and the Constitution of the United States, a Marine Corps veteran, a Harvard-trained attorney, Bishop of the Called Churches, and founder and president of STAND. Staying true to America's national destiny, the voice of the awakening, your host, Bishop E.W. Jackson.
And I am he. Great to be with you again today. And this is a very special day. This is National Law Enforcement Appreciation Day. And I want to say thank you to all the law enforcement officers out there for everything you do on a daily basis to make our lives safer, putting yourselves on the line for your fellow citizens. We are very, very grateful to you. They're recommending that if you see a police officer anywhere today, that you should say thank you to that police officer. Thank them for their service. You know, the way we do for our military people, thank a police officer today. You know, I've often had the privilege of buying a lunch for a police officer or a group of police officers, maybe they're in a fast food restaurant or something, and I see them and just tell the clerk, hey, listen, pay for that. I'm paying for their lunch, whatever it costs. Here you go. And, you know, I mean, it's just a small thing, but for a group of people who have been some of the most slandered and vilified and, frankly, unappreciated group of people in our country, and yet do tremendous service to help us all, it's just a small gesture to say, not everybody out there hates you. Not everybody out there is seeking to vilify you and to accuse you and to call you a bunch of names. There are those of us out here who really appreciate the dangerous and difficult job that you do and appreciate the courage and integrity with which overwhelmingly our police officers do their jobs. And so I want to let them know, let every police officer out there who is listening right now know, and spread the word if you have a police officer, a law enforcement officer in your family, as a friend or someone that you know that you work with. Let them know that we here at American Family Radio appreciate our police officers, honor the difficult and dangerous job that they do. We pray for them and really want them to know that they are supported. I'm convinced supported by the overwhelming majority of American citizens. So God bless each and every one of them. I'm going to have a guest on in the next segment from the Dallas Police Department. I went down to Dallas after five police officers were assassinated, met with the police officers down there, encouraged them. I've done some of that all over the country when something goes wrong and police officers are under attack. I've gone into communities and met with police officers, sometimes met with ministers when I could, to try to bring some semblance of rationality and reason and unity and peace, and to get people to understand that police officers are the best friends you can have in a time of trouble. I went to Ferguson, for example, actually attended the funeral of the young man. What's his name? If you all forgive me for this, Martin Brown, I think it is. I think it's Martin Brown, who was killed there, and met with police officers there, met with ministers there. And frankly, folks, as always, this stuff of trying to smear all police officers, you all know, Michael Brown was the name, Michael Brown, not Martin Brown, Michael Brown. As you all know, the whole thing was complete fabrication by a street thug who simply wanted to get people riled up against the police. So they came up with this garbage, false narrative, hands up, don't shoot, and all the celebrities and all the basketball players and football players who considered themselves woke picked it up, and all they did was pick up and propagate a lie. And one of the things I've said many, many times is when incidents have arisen is wait for the facts before you jump to conclusions, before people start excoriating police officers and rioting and all of this craziness that goes on. Don't even do that anyway, obviously, but before people get all emotionally worked up, wait for the facts. And of course, now we know when the facts came in, you had a 6'3", 6'4", 300-pound guy running at an average-sized police officer after already having tried to take his gun from him and running at him basically at full speed. So what exactly was that police officer supposed to do? But have you heard any apologies? No. Have you heard any, well, gee, we're sorry, we had the wrong narrative that was being promoted. Have you heard any celebrities say, we wish we hadn't participated in that? No. No, they're happy to allow that lie just hang there. And in the meantime, who gets hurt? Police officers. Because look, you all know that their police departments around the country have been having a very, very difficult time of recruitment. Maybe with President Trump in office, who is an avid supporter of police departments and police officers around the country, maybe that's improving. But I know for several years, police officers, every police officer I talked to, every police department I visited, same deal. We're having a very, very difficult time filling our quota of officers. Because when you spread propaganda against police and you try to turn them all into monsters, and being a police officer is as if it's a shameful thing, well, what do you expect? And yet at the same time, they really are the first line of defense against massive lawlessness. And I've said before, you're your first line of defense and somebody comes into your home or attacks you, that sort of thing, because it can take a while for police officers to get there. But in terms of trying to maintain a sense of law and order and peace and safety in our communities, they are the first line of defense. And they're often the first ones to be accused by the armchair quarterbacks who've never faced danger but think they know better how a police officer should have reacted. And by the way, I'm in no way making excuses. When things go wrong, when a police officer actually behaves in a lawless fashion, when they intentionally set out to violate the law, to use their badge as a means of committing crimes and getting away with it, that police officer should be punished to the fullest extent of the law. And in fact, sometimes I think a harsher punishment is justified because we trust that person with our lives and with the safety of our communities. But let's face it, that is rare. That is rare. Most police officers, for meager pay, are out doing a very difficult job, putting their lives on the line every single day and getting very little thanks for it. So, folks, we honor them and just want them to know that they are appreciated. And by the way, let me say this. I have gotten some nasty comments having said this. That won't come from this wonderful audience, of course, but there may be somebody monitoring the program who will amplify this and get me some negative responses. But I've said this before and I'll say it again. You know, the myth that the left tries to paint is police officers are out to get black men. They're out hunting down black men. We've heard that load of garbage from various quarters of the left. They're out hunting down black men. They're out to get black men. And I say, you know what? I am now, in fact, folks, I have a birthday coming up on Monday. You can send your gifts to. just kidding, folks. But I have a birthday coming up on Monday. And I've said, in all of my years, I have never had a negative interaction with a police officer. And by the way, I just so happened to be a black man. And I say, well, what happened? Why'd they skip me? You know? Well, let's face it, it's a myth. Because if you're not out there doing things that get you involved in negative interactions with police, the likelihood is that you're going to be treated professionally and go on about your business. So thank you, police officers. God bless.
This is Viewpoints with Kirby Anderson.
When a pundit or politician makes an erroneous statement, I wait to see if anyone corrects the error. Sometimes you have to wait a long time, often never, for a correction. That is why I waited a month to respond to some of the news reports and Twitter posts about the food stamp program. Mainstream media dutifully reported that the Trump administration formalized work requirements for food stamps. So far, so good. But then many concluded that 700,000 people would lose benefits. This led Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez to tweet that her family relied on food stamps and they would have starved under the Trump administration. Fortunately, some are willing to critique this hyperbole. Robert Rector is the Heritage Foundation's expert on poverty legislation. He took the time to clearly explain what the food stamp reform would do and not do. First, the reform would not affect parents with a minor child, the elderly, or disabled. Contrary to what AOC said, it would have had no impact at all on her family when they were relying on food stamps. Second, the reform is limited to able-bodied adults without dependents. Under the rule, they would be affected only after receiving aid for more than 3 months. Then they would be required to take a job. If they did not do that, then at least they should undertake job training, perform community service work, or at least look for a job. What about the headlines that 700,000 recipients would lose benefits under the reform? Robert Rector explains that not a single individual would lose benefits if they performed the pro-work activities required by the program. When properly understood, most Americans would probably agree with the reform. They're always willing to provide a hand up, but aren't as interested in giving a handout and maintaining people in poverty and dependency. I'm Kirby Anderson, and that's my point of view.
For a free copy of Kirby's booklet, A Biblical View on Antisemitism, go to viewpoints.info/antisemitism. Viewpoints.info/antisemitism.
I'm Peter Rosenberger, and this is your Caregiver Minute. You ever notice that we're often put on the spot to somehow fix whatever happens to be the crisis of the day or the hour? Some folks feel free to point out the obvious as if we can't see it, and then impatiently demand that we come up with an answer. Caregivers don't need others to rehash the same problem we've obsessed over, nor do we need folks to place another unreasonable request on our shoulders. Asking those individuals for solutions and then just being quiet gives them a moment's pause to consider the complexity of our world as caregivers. While everyone has opinions, few have solutions, and even less have the humility to walk with you in suffering when no solutions are apparent. Asking complainers to give me a solution is a great way to redirect their complaining energy, and if needs be, send them on their way.
This has been your Caregiver Minute with Peter Rosenberger, brought to you by Standing with Hope. There's more information at standingwithhope.com.
Brian Fisher here. What should we think of Nancy Pelosi's effort to curb the war powers of the president? What will happen if she never sends articles of impeachment to the Senate? Was the Iranian plane shot down by Iran's military? Democrats are in a panic that Bernie might actually win the nomination. And is global warming to blame for Australia's fires? Next on Focal Point.
Back to The Awakening with Bishop E.W. Jackson on American Family Radio.
National Law Enforcement Appreciation Day. LEAD is the acronym. That's interesting. National Law Enforcement Appreciation Day. And I wanted to have a guest on who I met some years ago after a terribly tragic incident took place in Dallas, Texas. And that's where five police officers were assassinated in cold blood. And one of the worst incidents we've seen. And I met this police officer down there at the time, and he and I have maintained contact since. He's got a lot of things going on, and we'll talk about some of those things. But right now, let's hear from Dimitri Penny. Sergeant Dimitri Penny, welcome, Dimitri.
Yes, sir. Thank you so much for having me on, Bishop.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you on, as always. Listen, let's recount for people what happened in Dallas, because some may or may not remember it, but just take a moment to set up the circumstances in which we met. What had gone on down there?
Yeah, essentially there was, this was the height of the Black Lives Matter movement. The movement had already, they had already burned down Ferguson twice, and then it had moved from Ferguson over to Baltimore, and Baltimore was in shambles. And then we got noticed that the movement was coming to Dallas, that they were coming to do a protest in Dallas. Now, a lot of us, you know, especially me, I knew exactly what this was. And unfortunately, they were able to connect with churches to help them organize their protests in Dallas. Now, normally we're fine with having these First Amendment protests, and it's great for them to do it. But the problem was they had a radicalized agenda, and the agenda was to incite the police, as well as they were holding the rally at nighttime in the late evening, which makes it hard for police to respond. So we kind of knew what was going to happen. So it was gearing up, and I was one of these, as an advocate, I was trying to get with the churches and try to discourage them from doing the protest. Because we simply didn't have that type of relationship with the police simply didn't have the type of relationship with the community that they had in other cities like Baltimore, Chicago, tension that was between the community. And they held this rally, they held this protest, and during this protest, we have a radicalized shooter that came out and shot and killed five police officers. Two of them were really good friends of mine. And that night, you know, I went to the hospital, and I was at the hospital while all these officers were coming in. Multiple officers were shot, but these officers were coming in back to back, and this was like a war zone in Dallas that we've never seen before. And that essentially laid the framework for me becoming who I became and advocating for real change in this country.
Well, I'll tell you, you are a hero of mine, because I came down there, and of course our audience may or may not know this, but you happen to be an American of African descent, and you were there in the community trying to sound a note of peace, trying to get people to work together, trying to help them to understand this is not Bull Connor's police department. This is a police department that wants desperately to work with the community. And I know you're a Christian, you've been working with churches and so forth. Since that time, how much progress has there been? Have things improved? Have people come to understand how dangerous it is to embrace these radical police-hating organizations like Black Lives Matter?
Right. Well, it took a little bit of work, Bishop. It took a lot of work, in fact. Like I said, I ended up, after the shooting attack happened, I ended up being the officer that filed the federal lawsuit against Black Lives Matter in an effort to bring attention to what they were doing. And at the time, the politicians wouldn't touch it. You know, if you were a black politician, you weren't going to say you didn't support Black Lives Matter. And if you were a white politician, you definitely wasn't going to say that you didn't support Black Lives Matter. So they were kind of had this quagmire going. But politically, no one would touch it. So I had to, you know, I filed the federal lawsuit in hopes of bringing attention to it. And as we start, you know, I started going on the circuit and speaking and doing a lot of different community engagement. And look, I hit it head on. I went straight to the black community. And I talked to the black community about this radicalized agenda. And eventually, we broke the mold. We broke the mold, and we were able to get people to see that this was a radicalized agenda that was dividing the black community. It was not about, you know, bringing the community together with its police. It was about ostracizing the police from their community, which was something that I grew up under that ideology of ostracizing our police. And I say that, Bishop, everyone's an advocate until they become a victim. I was a young advocate, and we talked about this before. I was a young advocate, you know, listening to the radicals in my community growing up and saying that we didn't want the police in our community, even though we were being victimized at a rate as high as that what was happening in L.A., which had criminal gangs at the time. And I'm from Houston, Texas. And it wasn't an advocate until they become a victim. And I had to witness my cousin get killed days before her wedding day, before me, while I was able to change my ideology and say, wait a minute, these police show up. They don't look like me, but they're not treating me the way that I perceived that everyone told me that they were going to treat me. In fact, my family was the one that was behaving illogically. And that changed my worldview. And look, 20 years, you know, I've been a police officer for 20 years now. You know, 25 years later, this is where I'm at. So I do believe in this message of engaging the community and bringing the community close to their law enforcement officers. Because you know what? If we get rid of law in our community, you're going to have nothing but anarchy. If you get rid of the people that are there to protect you, and if they decide to lay down, you're going to be nothing but victims. And there are a whole lot of those across this country right now. So you my know, message when, is going to be, oh, go ahead, Bishop.
No, go ahead. Your message is going to be, go ahead and finish that thought.
My message is essentially going to be that we need to unite the country. We need to unite the country behind the people that support us, our military, our law enforcement, those individuals that put their life on the line to keep us safe. we got to show them greater appreciation, get to a sense of nationalism in this country.
You know, I investigated Black Lives Matter when it first arose, and I can understand, I don't agree with it, but I can understand how politicians would be afraid to oppose it because Black Lives Matter. Well, of course, you can't disagree with that. The point is, though, that all lives matter. And right. The myth that it was propagating was that somehow police were literally out hunting down black men, out just basically just looking for black men to kill. And when I looked at the data, I said, it's simply not true. Then when I looked at Black Lives Matter, I found that Black Lives Matter was not really about saving black lives. It was about promoting an ideological, as you say, a radical worldview that was anti-God, anti-family, as far as I'm concerned, anti the things that have made this country and the black community thrive and prosper. Faith in God, personal responsibility, taking care of your own family. So it really brought a kind of Marxist agenda to the table. And so I can understand how it would lead to that kind of radical behavior, because it was never about saving lives in the first place. It was about creating chaos. I know, and I want to get to the positive side of this, what you're doing, but I know also for some years, and I'm hoping this has changed, all of these attacks on police led to a difficulty in recruiting new police officers. How is that going today?
You're still on that downward slope, unfortunately, because law enforcement has been demonized by the media. People are simply not going into the profession. You know, we thought for a long time here in Dallas that, people were, obviously we were being paid at a lower rate than most of the suburban cities, but we thought it was a money thing. And then you open it up and you start paying a lot more money. But then you have a lot, these young officers you're bringing in, you're training, you're spending all this money on them, and then guess what? They decide that afterwards that they don't want to do it, and they leave. So, that void is still there, and that's just in this city. I mean, it's happening across the country. So I'm thinking, at a certain point, it's not going to be about incentivizing officers to be there, but it's going to become about incentivizing the community to want the officers to be there.
Yes,
we're gonna have to move all the way to a more so a right conservative push in the community calling for more police. Let's give these officers whatever we need so they can keep us safe. And that's what's gonna have to change. That pen, I think, is moving there because of some of the radicalized shooting attacks that we've had at these schools, and especially these anti-Semitic attacks that are happening on our churches, and I mean just all these shootings that are popping up, which, by the way, Bishop, are being promulgated on social media platforms, and currently there's no legislative recourse for dealing with these social media platforms, Facebook, Google, and Twitter. They're allowing the post these radicalized messages to call for attacks and killing of police, and they have no responsibility. There's no legal requirement for them to remove the content, and there is no disciplinary action that would occur to them for them not removing it or working with law enforcement. So we have to change that from a legislative position.
I know you've got some ideas about that, and I want to hold you over after the break and have you come back and talk about what you're working on right now, because you're working on something very, very exciting right now. But before we take the break, just say a word about National Law Enforcement Appreciation Day. What does that mean to police officers, and what should it mean to the community? Well, you know what? I'll tell you what. You can answer that question after the break. I'm getting the bumper music, so I've got to come back. Folks, my guest is Police Officer Sergeant Dimitri Penny, and there's more to learn about him, so just stand by. We'll be back in a moment.
It's my turn.
Here is your host for My Turn, Don Wildman.
Let me ask you a question. Did you ever want to quit? Did you ever want to hang them up and call it a game? If you haven't, then you aren't normal. Every normal person has periods when he's ready to throw in the towel. Several years ago, I charted a course for my life. I chose what I believed to be the highest and truest way of living. I gave myself to it, and I have pursued it. But there have been times when I have wanted to quit, to call it a game and hang up the togs. Quitting is tempting because it's easier. You know, when you get knocked down time and again, it's hard to get up and go another time. When it seems as though you're behind and can never catch up, it's awful hard to keep trying. Life is tremendously demanding if a person pledges himself to the best he knows. It becomes so difficult sometimes that the temptation to give up is very strong. The benefits of giving up seem appealing and attractive. I can understand why some people have given up. They grew tired of following their highest dream, and then they started demanding less and less of themselves. Finally, the dream was no more. A person needs a solid foundation if he attempts to follow the highest and best he knows, because when the storms of doubt and despair blast against our structure, it will crumble like dust if there isn't something solid underneath. As I write this, I'm tempted to give up, to quit on the direction I chose some years back. All the advantages of giving up are looming out before me like water to a person dying of thirst. How strong the desire to quit. But I will not quit. I can't. Because I know that nothing worthwhile can be accomplished by quitting. I will never accomplish all I would like to, but I will accomplish nothing if I give up. And back there when I made my decision, I wasn't promised peaches and cream. The one I follow was crucified. Why did I think following him should be easy? No, I made my vow to be faithful. And that's all he desires of me. Not to be successful, not to be popular. One thing he desires of me, to be faithful. And you know, I can do that. I can be faithful. I can hang in there and give the best I have. I will be a better person by doing that, and stronger. And by doing so, I can help another who is struggling to stay above water. Quit? Sure, I want to quit. How easy life would be if I just call it a game and run away. But I will not do that, no matter how great the temptation. He is depending on me to be faithful. And that's the one thing I can and will do. I will not disappoint him. I will be faithful. So, give me a drink of the living water. I'm ready to get back into the game of life.
This has been My Turn with Don Wildman, a production of the American Family Association.
Back to The Awakening with Bishop E.W. Jackson on American Family Radio.
We're back. This is National Law Enforcement Appreciation Day, and my guest is Sergeant Dimitri Penny from the Dallas Police Department. He and I met right after the five police officers were tragically murdered by a sniper who killed them during a so-called Black Lives Matter protest when they were trying to stir the pot there. And a reminder to us of the dangerous and difficult job our police officers do and how important our support is to them. Okay, Dimitri, talk to us a little bit. You know, we've been encouraging people. Say thank you to a police officer. You know, if it's allowable, buy a lunch or breakfast for them, or just let them know that they're appreciated. What does this day mean to police officers, and what should it mean to the community?
It means everything to police officers, primarily because police officers don't hear thank you very often. You know, this is unfortunately, these are tumultuous times that have not appreciated the American law enforcement officer. But now where we are, this particular day, a national day of recognition where people can just say thank you, it means so much. To a law enforcement officer, this would be equivalent to what a veteran experiences on Veterans Day, where people see them in their uniform and they say, thank you for your service. I mean, you wouldn't understand the elation that a person feels just by knowing that someone appreciates this difficult job that they do day in and day out. So if you can buy an officer lunch, or if you can say thank you, I mean, whatever you want to do in terms of showing your appreciation, I encourage everyone to do that. And, you know, look, I've had a whole lot of that over the last several years, I've had I've seen a lot, and I'm to take it back to where we went in 2016. I will say, after the shooting attack, and after exposing these radicalized messages, we did see a level of togetherness amongst the community and the citizens. We did see people come together and just express their appreciation for law enforcement. I mean, it was beautiful. But unfortunately, we had to go through that tragedy in order to experience that. And what happens so often with these tragedies is that people forget. Time goes on and they forget. Mm-hmm. And when they forget, that allows individuals, the media and whatever to come in and change that narrative all back to what it was before. And it ends up, you know, impacting the perspective of law enforcement across the country. So
we should do this every day, really. It's great to have a day, but it should be a reminder to do it every day. You see a police officer, I often say to police officers when I have a chance to interact with them, you guys be safe out there. Because I know that, you know, we just take for granted, but a police officer can't, that they would get up any given morning and face a situation that doesn't allow them to come back home that evening. So we shouldn't take it for granted. But look, before we run out of time here, you're doing something very special. You're still with the police department, but I understand you've taken a leave of some kind, I'm not sure how you're working it out, but you're actually running for Congress in Texas, correct?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Amen.
Well, tell us.
This is what I've done.
Go ahead.
Yes, sir. Well, this is it, Bishop. I am an active Dallas police officer. What I do is I work a full-time shift. I work from 6 to 2, 6 in the morning to 2 in the evening. And when I get off of work, I go campaign. So, yes, I am running for U.S. Congress. This whole interview, you've been calling me by my government name. So I want people to know that I am Trey Penny. So when people see me, a lot of people know me as Trey. A lot of people know me as Sergeant Penny. So I'm running as Trey Penny, Dr. Trey Penny for Congress. So that's the campaign. When you see Trey Penny on anywhere, Penny for Congress, P-E-N-N-I-E, pennyforcongress.com, you can learn about me. But my agenda is real simple. I want to get to putting the people ahead of politics. I want to bring about real change to where we're pushing out these partisan ideas that cause us to attack each other. I want to make sure that we bring conservative values, because believe it or not, when I decide to run in this particular district, the district that has failing schools, low academic outcome, mm-hmm. they have failing infrastructure, and the highest crime, the highest murder rate in the state of Texas is essentially located in that district.
Wow.
When I initially announced that I was going to run in that district, everybody discouraged me, liberals and conservatives alike. But I did it because I feel that God was calling me to this. Why? Because the principles and values of this country don't change regardless of where you live at. And it should be a situation where just because I live in a specific area that I don't get the same resources as someone else that lives in another area. So what I'm going to do realistically, I'm going to address education. I'm going to make sure that those federal dollars are appropriately being spent so that our kids are being properly educated. I'm going to make sure that I address our veteran resources. We have the second largest veteran hospital in the United States, and we also have the largest centrally concentration of homeless veterans in that district alone. We have to address that issue. I'm going to address these veteran resource needs, and I'm going to, Bishop, you're going to love this. While I'm promoting and supporting religious freedom in this country, I'm also going to be advocating for these religious institutions, which also show to have a higher academic outcome. I'm going to also be promoting for vouchers for our educational institutions
parental
to be able
choice.
To educate
Absolutely.
Our kids.
Mm-hmm.
That's my position.
Well, look, first of all, I'm grateful that you are running because, you know, one of my frustrations is that you have pockets like the one you're describing, the district you're describing, with these terrible indices of failing schools and high crime and gang activity and all of this. But you don't see anybody offering a solution. It's just kind of taken for granted that that's just the way it is. You don't really hear anybody saying, we're going to solve this in Chicago. We're going to solve this in Baltimore. We're going to solve this. And you're stepping up and saying, you know what? I'm not going to allow that to stand. We are not going to live under those conditions. And so God bless you for it. And I'm glad you brought up parental choice in education, because I'm convinced that competition leads to excellence. And if you give parents the ability to make their own choices, whether they want to go to a private school, a public school, what kind of school, and you make the institutions compete for those parents, you're going to get a better quality education, whether it's in a public school or it's in a private school. So I'm really glad to hear that. You said that there's high crime and violence, and of course you as a police officer know something about how to deal with that.
Absolutely. And so my first thing is, we cannot address crime effectively until we deal with the conditions that create the crime. And that's what we, as politicians, that we have not been able to do in this country. We haven't been able to address, and this is class, for me, this is classic broken windows theory. If you leave items in the community broken, unattended, you give the impression that no one cares. And if you give that impression, guess what? If no one cares, they're going to do whatever they want. That allows the criminals to come in and take advantage and victimize the people. I got a better solution for that. And also, we got to make sure that the people that live in the community, I want everyone taking an interest in it. Why? Because we want to push back against the not me syndrome. Yeah, it may not happen to you today, but you know what? When you see that crime happening, you have an obligation to report it. Why? Because eventually it's going to impact you.
As opposed to snitches get stitches, right? As opposed to the cops are the enemy. Yeah.
Look, that's a flawed ideology. That's why. Look, I witnessed my cousin die in front of me. I witnessed that. My family was there, and they still refused to cooperate. That type of ideology, it hurts the community. We're smarter than that. We're better than that. People have an interest in that community. We got to get the thugs out that don't need to be there, that are victimizing people. We need to get them out.
Well, look, we're going to run out of time here shortly. But so before you go, I want you to make sure you tell people again who are interested in what you are doing and what you represent. How can they get in touch with you? How can they support your campaign? How can they find out more about you?
Yes, I do need support for this campaign. Look, this is a difficult district, but I want people to believe in me, believe in what my values are, believe that I'm going to. I know that God has already told me I'm going to win this district. I believe it in my heart, so I'm not listening to the naysayers. But I want people to learn everything that they can about me. Go to my website. It's Penny for Congress, P-E-N-N-I-E for Congress. That's the Trey Penny for Congress campaign. Go there and learn.
Is that pennyforcongress.com or .org?
Pennyforcongress.com. I'm sorry.
.com. Okay. All right.
Yes, sir. And thank you so much for having me on, Bishop. It's always an honor. I know that you're doing great things across this country, and I want to make sure that we stay in contact, because we want, you know what? We got to have our Christians. Our Christians have to get behind us, and they got to say, we can do better. We can do better.
Amen. Folks, Sergeant Dimitri Penny, candidate for Congress. It's the 25th district, isn't it?
Texas District 30.
District 30, the 30th district in Texas. All right, man. Well, listen, God bless you. Godspeed. Keep up the good work. That community needs you. Folks, we'll be back in a moment.
Every parent gets a deck of parenting cards from their family of origin, and we will automatically parent the way we were parented.
This is Focus on the Family Minute, and if Jan Foreman is right, what deck of cards did you get from your parents?
So in my mind, I see three piles. One pile is a keeper pile for those great things that we want to bring into our own families. But then there's always a discard pile where we have heard our mother's voice coming through us. And then there's a rewrite pile where we have, we kind of want to nurture our kids in that direction, but we want to also do it our own way. Not just say, your family wins, my family wins, but it's find the new us. What does that look like?
I really like that idea of a rewrite pile, and you can hear more from Jan and her husband Mark Foreman at familyminute.org.
Today's culture is opting for entertainment rather than biblical enlightenment. For those who resist that trend, Friends of Israel shows listeners why loving the Jewish people and supporting Israel is important to the Christian faith. Friends of Israel shares biblical truth about Israel and the Messiah and promotes solidarity with the Jewish people.
This is Chris Katulka of the Friends of Israel Today radio program, heard each weekend on this station, and here's what's happening in Israel.
Friends of Israel, Saturday afternoon at 2, here on American Family Radio.
Congratulations! Chick-fil-A has responded favorably to a letter from AFA and more than 116,000 supporters who signed our petition. Company CEO Dan Cathy says Chick-fil-A inadvertently discredited several outstanding organizations when they changed their charitable giving last November. The restaurant stopped giving to some Christian organizations in favor of groups with a more worldly viewpoint. While their response is encouraging, we hope Chick-fil-A does not stray any further from their godly values.
This is Dan Celia from Financial Issues.
You know, we look at the volatility in the markets right now, or the lack of anything in the markets, and this is a great time to take a pause, rethink all of our portfolio, look at our asset allocation model. Are we following the asset allocation model as it should be? Are we overweighted one place or another? You know, I've been an advocate for biblically responsible investing for many, many years. I've been an advocate for charitable gift annuity because I'm an advocate for permanent income. Call the AFA Foundation to start talking about it.
A knowledgeable AFA Foundation representative will gladly explain the nuances of charitable gift annuities and answer your questions. Find out about charitable gift annuities when you call 800-326-4543, extension 345. 800-326-4543, extension 345, or by visiting afafoundation.net.
Back to The Awakening with Bishop E.W. Jackson on American Family Radio.
We're back, and folks, I want to open the lines. If you've got something to say, particularly about a police officer and your interactions with police officers, your appreciation for police officers, please feel free to give me a call, 888-589-8840. I know we've only got one segment left to do that, but I'd like to get some of your comments in. And while you're calling, because we've got open lines right now, while you're calling, let me just add one other thing to the mix that you might want to comment on if we have time. John Kerry is up in arms because he says that the president of the United States told an outright lie when he said gave Iran $150 billion, not to mention $1.8 billion in cash. Now, here's how John Kerry responded to that. I want you to listen to this very carefully. This is a quote. Quote, "It is an outright lie by the president of the United States that they were given $150 billion. They were not. And the money that they did receive was their money because they sued the United States of America and won in court and were being paid interest." Now, wait a minute. Wait. Did you catch that? The money that they did receive, but he doesn't talk about how much money that was. He justifies it by saying because they won in court. But here's the part that really bothers me more than anything else. Here's what he says in defending Iran's right to get the money that they got. He says, "If we learn anything in our negotiation with Iran, it's their pride in themselves in a more than 5,000 year history as a nation state, as a culture, as a presence. And I think this president just doesn't stop to understand those kinds of things." So in other words, and I point this out because this is the John Kerry who came back from Vietnam and denounced America. By the way, John Kerry is the first politician to ever go overseas and denounce his own country overseas. He did that as a United States Senator. He's the first one to break what had been an inviolate principle, which is politics stops at the water's edge. We do not criticize our own country overseas in foreign nations with foreign leaders. He broke that. So having come back from Vietnam and told us how horrible our troops were in Vietnam, nothing about how horrible the Viet Cong were or the viciousness and brutality and torture of the Viet Cong. Oh, no. Our people were the problem. he now wants to lecture us about how great the culture of Iran is. Yeah, so see, the president just doesn't understand their 5,000-year culture and their presence and their... What? Yeah, it's 5,000 years of paganism is what it is. 5,000 years of paganism. Are you kidding me? Iran is Persia. Persia is the country in which Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and Daniel all got threatened with death because they refused to bow to their idols. This has been going on in Persia for a long time. These are Persians. These are not Arabs. They're Persians. But to lecture us, and I'm not trying to denigrate the Iranian people. They're human beings just like the rest of us are. But to lecture us about their culture and their presence and their 5,000-year history and their pride, and we don't really understand that. Well, how about our pride as Americans? How about our American culture? How about a little bit of loyalty and pride for that? Oh, no, no, no. That's too pedestrian for someone as elite and as intellectual and as high-minded as John Kerry. He doesn't care about that, but he's got to lecture us about how wonderful Iran is and the president's failure to understand it. And if anybody lied about the money, it's him with his little specious answer. Well, if they did get any money, it was because we owed it to them. Ugh. Okay, folks, I just had to get that one in, okay? While we honor our police officers, let's go to the lines and we'll get as many calls in as we can. Let's go to Merle in Mississippi. Merle, welcome. Former police officer. Welcome, Merle.
Hi, Bishop. I listen to you, and I think we must be brothers by another mother, and I know we have the same Heavenly Father.
Amen.
I was a police officer back in the late 60s and early 70s, and through that period of turmoil, I was held hostage by drug dealers while they debated where to bury my body one night when I was working undercover, lured out to be assassinated by contract killers near Memphis. And I was ambushed one day with my men when they had a sniper perched up on a railroad trestle with a high-powered rifle. Dramatic intervention by God that day. God finally subdued me and turned my life around, and I'm here to tell my stories and to share my redeemed life, show people my redeemed life, that they might want to meet my Redeemer. But I wanted to tell you that I've listened to some of your other programs about the radicals in our country, and we encounter a lot of those. Some of it began back in those days, and ran into a lot of those folks. And, you know, the ones that survived their own bombings, you know, like the weathermen and folks like that, you know, they became tenured professors. They took over the media. And, you know, we're reaping the whirlwind now from those days. They hated America then, and they hate America now.
And now they're indoctrinating our children. So, hey, Mr. Merle, thank you for the call. I'm a little short on time, but Merle, thank you for your service to our country, too. We really appreciate that. Those are some harrowing stories, and I'd love to have you on earlier so that we could hear some more about that. Let's go to Randy, also in Mississippi. Randy, welcome.
Hello, Bishop.
Hi, Randy.
I listen to your program every day, and I am also a minister. And I just want to reach out to all the police officers that I appreciate what they do, and I always tell them to stay safe. And when I get a chance, I do pay for the coffee or whatever else they may be buying in the store I'm at.
Amen. Randy, thank you so much for the call. You're getting a little feedback from your radio in the back, but thank you for the call. We appreciate it, and we appreciate your expression of appreciation for these police officers. Let's go to Jacob in Ohio. Jacob, welcome.
Hey, how you doing?
Doing great. Blessed. How about you?
Oh, not too bad. First off, I'd like to thank all the officers for the work that they do protecting us civilians on our day-to-day life. My opinion, it's unfortunate that people put officers in a category of the actions of one man that had a badge that does wrong or did wrong. It goes across the board, for say, like, people that ride motorcycles, people that have tattoos, they're automatically categorized as potential criminals or whatever they want to say. And it's just 100% biblically wrong for people to judge somebody by their appearance.
Amen. Jacob, thank you. And you're right. I've said many times, if you did that for a black person, people would call you a racist. You can do it for a police officer, and, you know, you're kind of in vogue. That's cool. Well, it's not cool. It's not right by any stretch of the imagination. If it's wrong to do it for a person based on the color of their skin, it's wrong to do it to a person based upon the color of their uniform. How's that one? Okay, let's go to John in Kansas. John, welcome.
Well, thank you, Bishop. I appreciate your radio ministry so much.
Thank you.
The question, or the Black Lives Matter people like to harp on that, and they and their supporters reacted badly against people saying, well, all lives matter. And I'll give them a little slack because blacks have been discriminated against over the years in our country. So the real expression should be all black lives matter. Those that are victims of their own people and those are victims of the police.
Yeah, but it's only the victims of the police, unfortunately, that seem to matter to this group because they're really not about saving black lives. They're about a polemic against our country. This is what Colin Kaepernick was made famous by. You know, this idea that somehow black lives are being destroyed by police officers. No, black lives are being destroyed by drug addiction. They're being destroyed by black-on-black crime. They're being destroyed by high blood pressure and heart disease and strokes and by a whole bunch of other things that are happening, much of which has to do with choices that people make, nothing to do with the things that police officers do in carrying out their duty. In fact, I guarantee you, if you had to measure it, you'd probably find police officers have saved a whole lot more black lives than any that they've taken. And by the way, one other quick thing, police officers in confrontations with suspects kill more white people in the course of a year than they do black people. But you'll never hear that. But that's the truth. It's not about the color of the person. It's about the danger that person poses to a police officer and the need from time to time to use lethal force to deal with it. I mean, now, we just got to get realistic about this stuff and stop being, actually, we know what they're being. They're really being just communistic because the communists would do away with, these leftists would do away with our police. And they've said, you know, do away with ICE. But you know what? Every communist country and socialist country, you know what? They have secret police that do nothing but oppress people. So couldn't get to any more phone calls, but we'll start earlier tomorrow. Tomorrow's Friday, and of course, it's anything goes. And not quite anything, but you know what I mean. Any topics on the table for tomorrow. In the meantime, folks, just express your thanks to a police officer. Let them know you care about them, you're praying for them. And in the meantime, remember, no matter what they say about police officers, about any of us who believe in God and love our families and love this country, we cannot be defeated if we will not quit, because we are on God's side.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.